They wanted to convey a strong sense that whatever it was that the United States said was not up to North Korean expectations.
North Korea nuclear talks end abruptly. It's Monday, October 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, new emergency measures in effect in Hong Kong, Japan's high-tech hotel experience, the evolving politics of impeachment, dangerous flu, power napping to better health. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea has angrily walked away from working-level nuclear talks with the United States. Pyongyang's top negotiator said he was greatly disappointed with Washington's inflexible approach, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
The first substantive nuclear negotiations in months between North Korea and the U.S. broke down after just one day in Stockholm, Sweden. North Korea's top nuclear envoy, Kim Myung-gil, says the talks failed because the U.S. would not abandon its old approach. The U.S. quickly disputed that characterization, saying the 8.5-hour talks went good and that the U.S. brought creative ideas. The breakdown raises the possibility North Korea will intensify its provocations days after testing a new medium-range ballistic missile. But the North's decision could also amount to a negotiating tactic meant to raise pressure on Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump appeared to use a similar tactic this February in Vietnam when he abruptly walked away from a summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. After that summit, both sides quickly said they would eventually like to resume diplomacy, but neither has indicated they will substantially change their negotiating stance. U.S. officials say they accepted a Swedish invitation to return to the talks in 2 weeks. It's not clear whether North Korea will show up. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
The difference between the reaction of the United States and North Korea to the collapse of the talks does not surprise at least one expert. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Evans Revere about what has occurred. Revere is the former deputy U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia and is a veteran of many talks between Washington and Pyongyang.
One might be forgiven for thinking that the two delegations attended different meetings in Stockholm because the U.S. response or the U.S. statement about what happened in Stockholm was significantly different from the North Korean reaction to what happened there. But even that is not particularly surprising to me. Looking at what the State Department has said publicly about what happened in Stockholm, it seems fairly clear that the United States did indeed put some new ideas and new initiatives on the table. And it made a point of showing creativity and flexibility, perhaps in part to signal to the North Koreans that this would not be a repeat of Hanoi and that the United States was indeed capable of demonstrating creativity and flexibility. But the very negative North Korean reaction to what happened in Stockholm tells me one of two things, and both of them actually may be true. It tells me that just like in Hanoi, the North Korean delegation may have come to the talks with an inflated or perhaps even delusional set of expectations about what would happen in these high senior working level talks. But there may be something else afoot here, and that is we may be seeing a time-worn tactic being used by Pyongyang. And what I mean by that is the North Koreans may have come to these talks determined to listen to what it is that the United States put on the table. And then they had already decided that whatever it was, they would reject it and walk away. And the point of the rejection being that they want to keep the upper hand in any future negotiations, and they wanted to convey a strong sense that whatever it was that the United States said was not up to North Korean expectations, and that it's time for the United States to go back home and do its homework and come back with something better. The North Koreans have often done that in the past, and they have often done that in the hope that the United States will begin to negotiate with itself and will go out of its way to make even more concessions than the ones that have already been made or suggested at the table in order to get North Korea back to the table. So that's my sense of what may very well have happened here.
Part of the conversation between VOA Asia's Ira Melman and Evans Revere, former Deputy U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia, and you can stop by the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. North Korea walks out of nuclear talks, blaming U.S. Police fire tear gas as large crowds defy Hong Kong mask ban. Australia denies extradition of Iranian academic to United States. Experts say North Korea's submarine-capable missile poses threat to U.S. allies. Australian couple released in Iran after 3 months. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much, much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Hong Kong government on Friday banned people from wearing masks at public protests by invoking a British colonial-era emergency regulations ordinance that was last used to quell riots in 1967. VOA's Brian Patton reports the controversial anti-mask law is strongly supported by pro-Beijing elements in the legislature that view the increasingly violent democracy protests as a threat to law and order, while opponents see the measures as a way to deter peaceful dissent.
Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, said on Friday the new anti-mask law that will take effect on Saturday is intended to target rioters and those that resort to violence.
The objective of this regulation is to end violence and restore order. And I believe this is now the broad consensus of Hong Kong people.
For the last 4 months, the city has been engulfed in unrest as democracy advocates engaged in increasingly confrontational tactics to fight against what they see as China's efforts to restrict Hong Kong's autonomy and civil liberties. Hong Kong government supporters defend the restrictive emergency measure as a need to protect public safety.
What we are talking about is pinpointing a riot and illegal assembly. So what we think that is the law will not affect the daily life of people and will not affect the freedom of speech and freedom of demonstration for Hong Kong citizens.
In central Hong Kong on Friday, thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators responded in defiance of the new law by wearing masks during a lunchtime rally. Some protesters have attacked police and destroyed property. Police, in turn, have used water cannons, tear gas, and rubber bullets against the demonstrators. This week, for the first time, a police officer shot an 18-year-old student using lethal ammunition during a massive protest on China's Communist Party anniversary. Opponents of the anti-mask law say the measure will not deter radical elements in the democracy movement. Instead, they say the anti-mask law is meant to expose peaceful protesters to intimidation and repercussions from China-affiliated employers.
But they have a good reason that they don't want to be retaliated or singled out by the Chinese investor behind their company.
Hong Kong legislators who have not been allowed to vote on the measure say this use of emergency powers erodes Hong Kong's democracy.
This is a further draconian step, attempt to restrict the freedoms and rights of the Hong Kong people, damage to the rule of law, and there will be no legislative scrutiny at all. So I think that this is a dangerous step.
Lam also said if the unrest continues, the Hong Kong government could consider further emergency measures. Brian Patton, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Hong Kong police fired tear gas in several locations Sunday as tens of thousands of pro-democracy protesters took to the streets to defy the ban of face masks. Protesters could be seen streaming through the city with umbrellas up as rain poured down on them. The new law threatens anyone wearing masks at protests with up to 1 year in prison. Hong Kong residents can still wear masks in the street, but under the new law, they must remove the masks if asked by police. The face mask ban also has exemptions for those who have legitimate needs to wear a mask. Many Hong Kong residents wear face masks to protect against pollution or infection, such as the outbreak of the deadly severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, that struck the city in 2003. Happening now in Asia, rights groups and opposition parties in Thailand are warning a new center to combat the spread of fake news online may be misused to target and silence government critics. Fake news via social media has been blamed for sparking deadly clashes elsewhere in Myanmar and Indonesia. Stay up to date with real news from VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. A high-tech hotel in Japan is science fiction come to life, with virtual ninjas staffing the front desk, facial recognition software that detects customers' moods, and dinosaur footprints leading to the elevator. VOA's Arash Arabasadi goes back to the future as he takes us inside.
It's check-in time at this hotel in Tokyo. Greetings. Welcome to the Henna Hotel. Just a few minutes' drive from Japan's oldest Buddhist temple sits the ultra-modern Henna Hotel, steeped in cutting-edge technology.
We can focus our human staff on more important jobs. In Japan, the population and workforce are decreasing, so there really is a demand for this kind of technology.
As Japan's population ages amid declining birth rates, companies look to automate jobs to address a looming labor shortage.
Kind of fun. Maybe if I bring my kids, maybe they'll be very happy.
The eye-popping technology does not delight all guests.
For European, we love to have like a contact, you know, to talk with someone real, because if for us it's a bit cold.
Not everything here is cutting edge. Clothing steamers in guest rooms or luggage locks are decidedly low tech. But hotel management has an eye toward the future.
There are going to be a lot of new technologies coming out. We plan on constantly changing to be a hotel where people can enjoy the latest technologies.
High-tech devices here speak English, Chinese, Japanese, and Korean. Until recently, the entire staff was non-human, but staff retired half of the electronics due to customer complaints. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, we keep track of the latest political moves in Washington. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, an Australian travel blogging couple who were detained in Iran on spying charges have been released and returned home. An Iranian judiciary spokesman said last month Perth-based Jolie King and Mark Firkin allegedly used a drone to take pictures of military sites and forbidden areas. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, emotions are running high in Washington as the impeachment inquiry targeting President Donald Trump gains momentum. This latest battle over the Trump presidency is likely to worsen the sharp political divide with the country just as the 2020 presidential campaign gets underway in earnest. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the political stakes and fallout from the impeachment battle in Washington.
Schiff has now been proven to be a liar. We've known it for 3 years because they've been trying to impeach for 3 years.
At the White House, President Trump is in battle mode over the Democratic impeachment inquiry.
People have said to me, how does he handle it? Because it's all a fraud. And because of that, and because I know that I'm right, and because I'm doing a great job for the American people, I'm very, very happy living the way I'm living.
Trump has also ramped up his attacks on the news media.
But much of it is corrupt. It's corrupt. You have corrupt media in this country, and it truly is the enemy of the people. Thank you very much.
Congressional Democrats remain focused on Trump's phone call with Ukraine's leader and his appeal for help in trying to find political dirt on Democratic presidential contender Joe Biden. Democrat Adam Schiff.
To try to effectively coerce a foreign leader that is completely dependent on our country for military, economic, diplomatic, and other support, to intervene in our election to help his campaign, it's hard to imagine a more corrupt course of conduct.
The conversation that I had was absolutely perfect.
Trump has denied any wrongdoing and described the exchange as a perfect call. But legal expert Paul Schiff Berman says the allegations are serious.
The entire purpose and content of the call, as released by the White House, is only to further the president's personal political efforts to hurt one of his political opponents. And that's an abuse of power and authority that goes beyond anything I think we've ever seen.
But is Trump's behavior serious enough to warrant removal from office? That's the whole point of the impeachment inquiry, says expert Thomas Schwartz.
I think the real question will be whether it rises to the level of an impeachable offense. And I think that's going to be it might be helpful there in the investigation if they can find a pattern of this type of behavior in his other interactions with foreign leaders.
The impeachment battle is already hardening feelings about Trump among both supporters and opponents, and will likely worsen the already sharp partisan divide in the country, says William Galston.
The polarization is both increasing and deepening, and there is no getting around the fact that we are in for months of conflict around this issue. It will pour gasoline on an already raging fire, I'm afraid.
The impeachment debate effectively becomes the opening round in the 2020 presidential election battle, says John Hudak.
The next 5 to 8 weeks is probably going to tell us a lot more about the 2020 presidential election than the last 3 years have.
Trump is no stranger to political battles, and the next one could be the defining moment of his presidency. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. Australia will not extradite an Iranian academic to the United States following a 13-month detention of the researcher for allegedly exporting American-made military equipment to Iran. Australia's Attorney General said his decision followed Australian domestic legal processes. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the flu season has started in the Northern Hemisphere, and although it's still very early in the season, two deaths have already been reported. One was a child, and the other an adult with a chronic illness. However, seemingly healthy people can also die from the flu. More from VOA's Carol Pearson.
Those most likely to die from the flu are the very young and the very old, but seemingly healthy people die as well. Jen Ludwin was one of those seemingly healthy people when she caught the virus. She was young, 23 years old, with no underlying conditions.
I figured, you know what, I'll spend 7 days in bed and just fight it off and I'd be okay. But I was totally wrong.
Ludwin's organs began to fail.
I was already in septic shock and that my organs were starting to fail. On top of that, I had ARDS, which is a respiratory distress syndrome, and then DIC, which caused me to bleed internally and clot in my extremities. And all of those complications together led to gangrene in my limbs, and so I became an amputee.
Dr. Eric Atkins at the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center says when a virus attacks the body, it's like an all-out war.
The body's response to infection is basically a big inflammatory response that can cause all kinds of problems in the various organs.
It's a mystery why otherwise healthy people have severe complications from the flu. But researchers at Ohio State University College of Medicine uncovered a clue. Jacob Yount specializes in the study of microbial infection. He says the researchers found a link between a heart complication as a result of getting the flu and a protein that's critical to fighting it.
We make this protein and it inhibits viruses from entering our cells.
But Yount says some people have a genetic mutation that blocks the production of that protein, and without it, the flu is more likely to infect the heart and lead to heart failure.
It can actually block the electrical current that's traveling through the heart.
The study found that the mice without this gene were more likely to have heart complications after being infected with the virus. Dr. Eric Atkins says this finding may help doctors care for flu patients in the future.
If you know that they're missing the gene ahead of time, that you may tailor your medical therapy differently.
The researchers say that millions of people worldwide are likely to have this genetic mutation, including about one-fifth of those of Chinese descent. Now that scientists understand what might be causing the problem, they're searching for treatments that might prevent or reverse these heart complications in the future. Right now, though, the best protection is getting a flu shot. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
A full 8 hours of sleep just isn't in the cards for some people, but what about a quick nap? Before you consider dozing off, we have one more short bit of new research to share, which suggests short naps can lower a person's risk for cardiovascular events like heart attacks and strokes by as much as 48%. Now, if cutting your risk of a heart attack in half just woke you up a bit, Karina Bafredjian tells us of her visit to a new shop that believes in the value of a good nap.
Over a third of Americans, about 35%, don't get enough sleep, according to a new study by the U.S. Center of Disease Control and Prevention. But the Recharge PowerNap Studio in D.C. is trying to solve that problem.
What really a PowerNap is that in-between state between being awake and between being asleep, where your brainwave activity is lower, and that's what helps you rest. It's not necessarily that you fall asleep. It's just being in that restful space, that makes you feel better after, more productive, more energized.
The idea of a short power nap, not longer than half an hour, was developed in the 1990s by U.S. psychologist James Moss. His research suggested napping doesn't necessarily mean falling asleep, as long as other conditions are present, dim lights, cool temperatures, and quiet.
I'm nicer to people when I come, and if I don't come for like a week or two, I can definitely tell that my mood changes back to stressed out.
Well, I've always really loved meditating and relaxation, but right now I have a 5-month-old at home, and so this is my chance in the middle of the workday to get a little bit extra sleep, a little bit more relaxation.
More and more companies are buying into the idea of power naps. Special sleep capsules are installed at corporations like Google and Amazon, yet full-on nap studios remain a rarity. But sleep and meditation researchers believe this concept will soon win hearts and minds the world over.
I think that as we move forward, we will be focusing more as a society, as in America, on providing spaces for health, wellness, rest, relaxation, and providing a space for some little naps during your day.
The Power Nap Studio has been open for over 3 years now, and the price for a 20-minute nap session costs $9. But for the people who use it, it's a small price to pay for good health, a quick recharge, and a brighter outlook. Karina Bafredjian for VOA News, Washington, D.C.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can follow us on YouTube, on VOA Asia Twitter. You can also find us on VOA Asia Facebook, where many of you, I'm sure, have been listening to our program today. We also are found on the radio. Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines carries our program, and we say hello and thanks to everyone who's tuned in today. We'd also like to say thank you to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hyung and Afra. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a nice day.